Hello, and today I'm talking to Dr. Claire Ashby, and our topic today is female hormones. What are they and what do they do for us? So, Dr. Ashby, I know you've worked a lot in female hormones with patients and been able to give a lot of amazing care. What sort of things do female hormones, what are female hormones?
Hi, Kathy. Good afternoon. So whenever we think of women's female sex hormones, we think about three hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And we primarily think of them coming into a young woman's life when they begin their periods. And a young girl's periods won't have what we would call a mature hormone axis. So there's a hormone communication from the brain. There's two parts of the brain that then communicate down to the ovary. And the ovary then produces hormones that encourage the lining of the womb to build up and thicken and then to shed. And that is what a girl's or a woman's monthly cycle is made up of. In the midpoint of that cycle, that's generally when you get your testosterone peak. And primarily the first part of the cycle is mostly estrogen, and primarily the second half of the cycle is dominated by progesterone with a little estrogen. Now, when a girl first begins their periods and moves through their teenage years, that's a very inconsistent time for their hormone levels. So lots of their cycles aren't fully mature cycles. And so often girls can end up with heavy periods, which is a common problem we see and a common reason we see young girls come for a consultation, commonly with their mother receiving a lot of support. So there's lots of interesting supportive things that can be done there. And possibly the one message that I think I didn't know when I was a younger doctor or a younger woman was that it will mature of its own accord and it's a question of time, but you can support and help the cycle be more acceptable to the young girl and more manageable with different treatment strategies. Then I suppose the next normal event in a woman's life, when you think about sex hormones, is do they want a contraception and what are their contraceptive choices? We could talk for a long time about that, Kathy, because there's a wealth of contraceptive choices. I'm really interested in always trying to find the right contraceptive choice for each woman because they are so diverse and there's a very stepwise choice made inherently for women to have a what we call a contraceptive pill that's made up of both a synthetic estrogen and a synthetic progestogen. And they are so very different, the different choices you have within all the different products. So my most important message would be to anyone who's ever had a contraceptive difficulty, so perhaps had a contraception which might have changed their weight or their mood, or for other reasons not found it very tolerable, come and talk to us, because Dr. Dasgupta and I are particularly informed and keen to help people understand what the different choices are, be that from different modes and ways to receive your contraceptive through, for example, an implant or a patch or a pill, to a coil, but really to unpick carefully the natural history of a woman's hormone cycle, their experience of their own hormones. Do they feel well mid-cycle? Might they feel more PMS-like as they come into their period? And with all that information, and they might have a bit of histamine intolerance that they've never realized, for example, which we'll talk about latterly, we can then help guide them with the choices that might be right and most suitable for them. And there's a brilliant new choice of single hormone contraceptive. So it's a single hormone which is a progestogen, so what has commonly been termed a mini pill, but this brand new pill, well, relatively new anyway, called Slynd, is a very, very nearly it's a body similar progestogen pill, so it's very like your own progesterone. This nomenclature is difficult, isn't it? But my message wants to be, if you've had difficulties, don't think that contraceptive choices are out for you. You often can just need a conversation and the world is changing and our options are changing.
That's great to know that, you know, science is bringing forward new types of medicine that we really can use for the benefit of our patients. So just thinking of the estrogen you were talking about thickening the endometrium or lining of the womb, once that phase is completed, then there's a change of peak of hormones happening in the body. What happens following that in the normal sort of life cycle of a female hormone?
Okay, so let's break this down to the 28-day cycle a woman might have if they're having a conventional cycle. So day 1 to 5 or day 1 to 7 is when a woman would have her flow and her bleed. Then at that time, the estrogen would start picking up to the midpoint of the cycle. That's when you'd have your testosterone peak. It comes in a very narrow peak, normally in the midpoint of the cycle. And then progesterone comes in. And I suppose you can think of that as like the womb matron. It's coming in as the surveillance, checking that the lining of the womb was thickened appropriately, is organized and prepared in case there's a conception or fertilization of an embryo in the tube. And then that, if that were to come down, it would have an appropriate nourishing place to grow. When the body realizes that hasn't occurred that month, the progesterone again takes on its matron-like role and organizes a thorough and effective clear out of the lining of the womb. And it is when the progesterone isn't present to the full degree in the young women, because their hormone level isn't, hormone axis isn't mature, so they're not having fully ovulatory cycles and they're not getting progesterone. And then the same thing happens in perimenopause. So that probably links us through to the other end of a woman's reproductive cycle, where, again, you've probably gone through those immature years where things are very inconsistent and inconsistent levels of hormones. And then you come into almost the same phase again when you're in perimenopause and the hormone levels become inconsistent again. Progesterone isn't there consistently each cycle, and the estrogen levels can have peaks that are much higher than they have been through your mid-years.
And in that cycle you've just described really nicely of estrogen rising and then followed by progesterone and the way those interact, testosterone sits within that cycle. And what is that doing in that cycle? Anything in particular, or is it just always a constant level for women?
So it's not quite at a constant level. It will be present and then have this mid-cycle peak. Testosterone's been very under-regarded and under-researched, I think, over the years. It hasn't been a medical priority. We have a license for its treatment for low libido in the menopause, but we certainly observe caring for women, it's becoming more documented and more considered that it will help women in terms of their mood, their motivation, commonly helps lessen anxiety, commonly improves libido. That's partly why it's there in the mid-cycle at a peak, because that was always the nature's intention, that a woman would have a improved libido at the time she was most fertile. But it can help with sleep, it can help with confidence, mental clarity. So there's a numerous advantages that testosterone brings to a woman, and when a woman's testosterone levels start to wane, they can notice a number of these symptoms become relevant to them.
And an interesting fact that we were talking about briefly earlier is the relative levels of these hormones. So actually, you know, one to the other, how much estrogen do we have versus testosterone? And, you know, how surprisingly high our levels of testosterone are, I believe, that we were talking about, because we don't normally think of it in those terms.
No, we don't. You're right. Testosterone has always historically been associated with men, and estrogen's always been associated with women. And that's because men relatively have a lot higher testosterone levels than we do, and we have higher estrogen levels than they do. But it's a surprise, but very real, that we have more testosterone in our body than we do estrogen. And you and I discussed that it became very clear at that moment in time when I realised, and it was sort of well documented, that the testosterone levels are recorded at a blood level, well, in a blood unit that is 1,000 times greater than the estrogen levels. So once you start making the relative comparison of the two, you then will take an appreciation that there is so much more testosterone in a woman's body.
So it's quite an interesting area to consider when a patient comes to see you or Dr. Dasgupta, just to take on board the effects of losing some hormones in the menopause. So when you see a woman for a consultation, how much of this are you able to discern from testing, and is some of it just to do with the symptoms that are presented?
So whenever I'm having a hormone health consultation with a woman, we start with understanding when their hormonal cycle began, what's been their lived experience of their hormonal cycle, have they never had a difficulty with it at all, have they always had difficulties, have their periods been like, what is their contraceptive need, and what are their aims for the conversation we're having, where are they in their life in terms of, do we actually need to be considering this could be early perimenopause, what are their fertility wishes and wants. And then when you've established all of that together, that's when you start working forward towards what the aim is that the woman was hoping to achieve and how you best achieve that for them.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Dr. Ashby.